Jesus the good teacher, Jesus the therapist, Jesus the giver of bling. The Issues Etc. book of the month for June is Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? 12 False Christs. It's written by regular guest Dr. Matt Richard. Read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or purchase Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? By calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month, Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up?
You wanted a prophecy. This is your prophecy.
Young man came from hunting, faint and weary.
I know what kind of a man you are.
What is that, my lord, my dearie?
I know your story.
Behold, the man who pulled sword from stone.
I'm not getting drawn into this mess. There's an army of you. There's only one of me. I'll talk. I'm happy to talk. But there is no way that I am fighting.
There's a bit of the trailer for the movie King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. How is it that we are still having Arthur movies made and the story retold and retold again? More than, what, 1,000 years after the story was formally told, and probably 1,400 years before that name first comes up in English legend. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 29th of June. We're going to be reviewing the movies King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales with Pastor Ted Giese. You can join us with questions or comments over the next hour. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. comment line 618-223-8382. Pastor Ted Giese is a regular guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
By the way, congratulations. Tell us about a recent award that you have received for one of your movie reviews.
Yeah, I just found out about this yesterday, actually. It's from the Canadian Church Press, and they had their annual awards, I guess going back to things that were written in 2016. And I got first place, and in a particular category, it's in the media review category, and it's for the review of X-Men Apocalypse, which is one that we also talked about on Issues Etc. So that's pretty exciting.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much. This
is just one of probably dozens of either Arthur or Arthur-based films, King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. What about this story has such remarkable staying power? 1,000 years after it was first formally written down in poetry, and probably 1,400 years after Arthur first appears in literature?
Well, I think the people who put together the movie, Guy Ritchie and his advertising wing that helped advertise it, kind of got to the point of it in a way. There is a poster that people may have seen, and on the poster it says, from nothing comes the king. So this idea of rising up from practically nothing. And I guess that in a way there is probably an allegorical kind of connection with Christ in that particular element of the story. So the story is the rightful king coming into possession of his kingdom against a world and other people who have control of it. In the King Arthur story, there's of course the sword and the stone that gets pulled out as evidence that this is actually the one who should be the king. Only the one who can pull the sword out can get become the king. So they kind of have that wrapped up in this movie too. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's coming into inheritance. So there's a lot of allegorical kind of resonance that goes along with both the life of Christ and also the Christian life in a way too, that that, you know, there is an inheritance coming for us as baptized members of God's family, and that that will come to pass. So there's those kind of elements. Also, it's very much good versus evil. And of course, it's been wrapped up also in the a number of different aspects of the Christian story. There's also the Grail cycle. This one is not about the king, like about the Grail, like the Holy Grail kind of stuff is not part of this. But it's the tagline is King Arthur, the Legend of the Sword. So it's more about, I guess it would be an origin story, and it's about that Excalibur and the king and Arthur and how he all fits into the story.
Those others, just for kind of context, there are other parts of this legend that have accrued to it, both in literature and in film, that probably people are as familiar with. The Grail cycle, as you say, the Round Table, all of those, the knights, all of those things fit into this story.
Yeah, you get bits and pieces. Like, there's certainly the Round Table stuff comes up, and you are introduced to some of the people who are going to be knights of the Round Table. They're kind of part of this as it unfolds, this story. So it's kind of like there's been a whole bunch of these King Arthur films in the last, you know, 60 years or whatever. But this one is kind of, you could say that it's a little bit like that movie Excalibur that came out in 1981. There's some elements of that. It's not as, the one thing I remember from that movie is how polished up all the armor was, how, you know, like chrome and polished it all was. This one's not like that. It's grittier. And that's because of this director, Guy Ritchie, who people mostly probably know from kind of crime dramas, actually, not so much from fantasy genre. So he's the director who did Rock and Rolla, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. He also did The Man from U.N.C.L.E. recently, which was kind of a fun movie. He did two kind of that has that same kind of gritty kind of stuff in it is the Sherlock Holmes movies. There was two of them, Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, and then just the first Sherlock Holmes that came out in 2009. So that kind of grittiness he brings to this. So there's not a lot of like polished chrome-like armor in this King Arthur movie. But then it also has all of this kind of stuff that's maybe would fit more with like Conan the Barbarian from 1982. It has that kind of feel of it too. So you can kind of have equal parts Conan the Barbarian, Guy Ritchie crime drama, and with these echoes of Excalibur from 1981.
What
that gives people an idea.
So what part of the story, you said it's an origin story, but what part of the story, what's the main kind of direction of the plot of this one?
Well, it's him finding out that he is actually the future king, I guess, and getting his sword Excalibur and then defeating his uncle who has usurped the throne, essentially. So it starts with kind of stuff with his own father and his uncle and kind of a battle where the his father, Uther Pendragon, dies. And as a small child, he's whisked away. And then he grows up on the hard streets of London and is involved in all sorts of criminal activity, actually, but then eventually gets the sword. And it kind of all falls into place as to him becoming the king. So at the very end of the film, he's now the king. The Round Table is being constructed. He's got some of his knights, and he's ready to move on to the next thing if there's a sequel kind of a deal.
Does you say that there's a at least one theme or an element in this story, and that of blood sacrifice. How does it play into the story, and what do you see there as a Christian observer of this film?
This is kind of an interesting thing. I think we find, if you're watching movies, there may be, this kind of thing might pop up in different places. But essentially, I'd mentioned the uncle character who usurps the throne from Arthur's dad. So Arthur's dad is played by Eric Bana, and the uncle, Vortigern, is played by Jude Law. And essentially what they've got here is this kind of blood sacrifice thing where two of these kind of primordial snake-like, kind of like imagine sort of, I don't know, a mermaid kind of grotesque kind of thing that's also kind of like snaky down in the pits of this dungeon. The uncle character is required to give a blood sacrifice. And if he does that, And for this movie, it's you know, a family member, somebody that he loves. If he does that, then he's going to be rewarded with power, military victory, that kind of stuff, wealth, these kinds of things. So he initially, it's his wife that he sacrifices. And then later he has to do it again and he sacrifices his daughter. So now these are, you know, teenager, adult women. But the thing that kind of pops up into your head is this idea of blood sacrifice. And when you think of scripture as a Christian, you're going to go to Moloch of the Old Testament and Baal worship and how people were being tempted into sacrificing their own family, their own children, in what they would expect to be the promise of riches or, you know, fertility for their land or something that they would find desirable. So this is like this kind of temptation that was their part in the Old Testament world. In our modern day, of course, abortion can be similar to this in that people will say, for some different future, I have to sacrifice this child in order to have the future that I think I might get if I do this. So, you know, like this is kind of like a postnatal abortive kind of stuff. And he's basically eroding his soul and he's doing this for selfish reasons. And this is why he's the villain in the movie. And so as a Christian, sometimes if you see these kind of blood sacrifice kinds of things coming up, there are places in scripture that deal with blood sacrifices and even blood sacrificing of family members. And these things are prohibited in scripture.
You say there's a quote from the film that's worth a little discussion. What is it?
Okay, so this movie came out in May, so some of the viewers will have already seen it, and this is kind of in the realm of spoiler kind of thing, and I think it's, you kind of need to put it into a little bit of context for it to be clear as to why it's important. So essentially, when Arthur, you know, beats his villain that he's going to beat, which, as an aside, is a scene that's very much like a computer game end boss kind of a thing, and that kind of yanks you out of the movie in a way, like, or it did for me at least. But anyways, he defeats the villain, and then in the defeating of the villain, he says to his now uncle who's dying, he says, "You created me, and for that I bless you. You make sense of the devil," which is kind of a strange comment. And it's very clearly like this is at the apex of the completion of the story for him with this demonic kind of villain that he's like trying to defeat. And as a kid, he suppressed information about what happened in his father's death because he witnessed his father's death. And as the film progressed, he kind of saw more and more of it, came to terms with it or something to that effect. And then in the end, he realized who it was, that it was his uncle, actually. And so he now is in the position of being the king, as it were. And he says to the vanquished, "I bless you. You make sense of the devil." So this thing that dogged him his whole life and actually put him onto the streets and made him into who he was, he then turns and says, "All of these hardships, all of these troubles, all of these things that you were the source of, made me into who I am, and now I understand what all of that is and what it all amounts to, essentially." I think that's kind of just an interesting take on things, interesting thing to have pop up in a movie.
Well, finally, on this film, are there, obviously there's going to be battle and all those kind of things. Are there any cautions that you would issue for those who are planning to watch it?
Well, it's rated 14A in Canada, and in the States it's PG-13. Guy Ritchie often does, like, I mean, some of the films that he's done, like especially the crime drama ones, they're R-rated films, and there's an element of it that you might not expect in that all of this stuff about him growing up and living on the streets, it is very much like a gritty crime drama kind of stuff, kind of a movie in that case. So there is prostitution, and there's, you know, different things like that connected to it, violence. So it has some elements in it that are not, you know, going to be good for young folks. It is also very dark, just in general. It's another one of these movies where it could use some more color and light in it. So there's kind of this kind of dark feeling about the whole thing. And then there are a couple spots. There's one moment where there's a big F-bomb in it, and might not be expected, but I think with a PG-13 movie, you can have one of them or something. There's some kind of odd, very murky rules about what you can and can't have at these certain levels of movies and their ratings. So that's one of the things is that it's not completely good, right, and salutary all the way through, let's say. So, you know, like it's not really a movie for kids. I think that some of the stuff they don't show in the trailers, like the primordial kind of, you know, villainous kind of mermaidy kind of things that are wanting the sacrifices are quite distressing. Probably would be for some viewers, I'm sure.
We're talking with Pastor Ted Giese, reviewing some movies on this Thursday afternoon, June the 29th. That's King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. When we come back, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Throughout the history of the United States, we as a country have enjoyed our catchphrases, from give me liberty or give me death, to today's classic, it is what it is. TV commercials have added such classics as where's the beef, to eat fresh. Here at St. Mark Lutheran Church in Edmond, Oklahoma, we do not resort to catchphrases. Here we are about growing God's family, by preaching God's word, by administering the sacraments, and building up God's people. So the next time you find yourself in central Oklahoma on a Sunday morning, come join the friendly folks at St. Mark in Edmond. You'll be glad you did. This is most certainly true.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you've ever wondered why Amazing Grace is the national anthem of funerals, or pondered the state of your eternal soul after you die, the Lutheran Witness has got you covered. Check out the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness to learn more about death, dying, heaven, and hell. Not a subscriber? Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness for a special offer. $6.99 for 6 digital or print issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
If you've ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Synod and have wondered why more people from my congregation aren't here, check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so the pastors of your circuit can organize, promote, and present a seminar that appeals to the members of your congregation, even the youth, is provided free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org and click on the blue box, or check us out on Facebook.
Pirates had infected the seas for generations. I vowed to eliminate them all. And then, there was this boy, Jack Sparrow.
Follow him in!
He took everything from me. And filled me with rage.
That's the trailer for the movie Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing some movies on this Thursday afternoon, June the 29th, with Pastor Ted Giese. And we're moving on to Pirates of the Caribbean, the fifth of the Pirates of the Caribbean films and therefore probably have to orient ourselves. Ted, how would you orient us in the storyline such as it is as this latest film moves the Pirates of the Caribbean train along?
Well, I think the very first one that came out was one of the most fun of them, right? So it kind of took people by surprise. I think that it was kind of a movie where you had Johnny Depp playing this pirate and nobody knew if that was going to work out or not. And then everybody was delighted and it was awesome and they enjoyed it a lot. Now, some people maybe don't like these movies at all. I understand that. As a kid, I remember watching Errol Flynn in movies. I'm not that old, but I did watch them on video and stuff. Errol Flynn in movies like Captain Blood and the Seahawks and that kind of stuff was super fun. So these movies were super fun and it had also this twist of kind of like supernatural stuff with curses and things like that and zombie pirates, etc., all going on in them as well. So they were very fun movies. The first three of them kind of told a more or less complete story. And then the fourth one, the one previous to this called Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, got into mermaids and other stuff. And it lost some of the main actors in it. Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom, who played these young people who fell in love, Will Turner and Elizabeth Swan, they kind of like vanished out of the story for the fourth one. But they come back into this movie. So like they're back into this movie and you have kind of some very satisfying conclusions to things. They kind of suggest maybe that they could have more of these movies, but if they stopped right here and you kind of just skipped over the fourth movie, you would have a pretty good, solid bunch of movies to watch.
How would you describe the genre here? Because, I mean, obviously you have pirate movies, swashbuckling movies, but this one is, it's got like, it's set in its time, but it's also stylized in a way that no pirate would ever dress like Jack Sparrow dresses. It's kind of like a modern twist on what would have been kind of the traditional view of the pirates, and its humor is also kind of anachronistic to the time it's supposed to be.
Yeah, this is a movie or a series of movies with its tongue firmly planted in its cheek. Like, and that's part of the fun of them is that these ones have not lost their sense of fun. Like sometimes like we see these movies and they're very dour and they're very self-important and these ones don't really care about that. They are, like you said, they've got their funny little jokes and stuff. They do some fun things with the kind of the language of the time. They kind of, put that stuff into it. But it is kind of almost like a parody of the time, but it's a very gentle, loving kind of parody. Like people, it's the way people might have wanted pirates to be, not the way pirates actually were. Plus kind of like everything through the lens of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, maybe, like if that makes any sense.
So I've only seen, I think, one of them, and it was so long ago that it's been completely wiped from my memory. Too many other things to keep in my mind. But if I recall correctly, these are not, everybody's pirates more or less, but not all the pirates are villains. Am I right?
That's right. So in the first one, it's all kind of like a point of view kind of thing. Like like you always have like the British army or like the Navy rather, or like in this case, the Spanish Navy. There are these different navies that want to squelch the pirates, like get the pirates out of the seas. So they look at all pirates as all of them being villains. But a lot of your good guy characters in this case, they amongst the pirates, they look at some pirates and go, well, that guy's a villain and this guy's kind of a good guy. And like they have their kind of, I guess, for want of a better term, pirate code, as it were. But there's a lot of double crossing and, you know, shenanigans that go on amongst the pirates, too. Like they can't kind of trust each other and they have to keep proving that they can trust each other. That's part of all of these. So, in fact, in the very first film, you have Jeffrey Rush, who plays Captain Barbossa, and he's like the villain of the first film. But in this film, Dead Men Tell No Tales, Captain Barbossa, played by Jeffrey Rush, actually is a compatriot, and in the end is really the good guy or a good guy in the story.
So is it like Robin Hood on three-masted sailing ships?
Yeah. I mean, and Errol Flynn had played Robin Hood too. So if you think back to those movies from back then, that kind of gives you an idea. And listen, if you're younger and you've never watched Seahawks or Captain Blood or any of those kind of movies with Errol Flynn in them, they're black and white, they're pirate movies, go find them. I don't know where you can find them, but go find them. Maybe they're on Netflix. I have no idea. But go look for those because they're a lot of fun too. It's just kind of like that kind of thing. But then, like I said, through the lens of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because you have this kind of supernatural element to the whole thing as well.
So talk about that, because it's just woven straight through everything. It's not just pirates with their scabbards and their swords, it's and their cannons. It's there are undead, there are all kinds of supernatural creatures.
There are, and a lot of these are kind of really just literary plot devices that exist in it. There is a way in which this current film has some interesting things going on in it. But a regular thing is this idea of curses, pirates and curses, cursed treasures, curses that pirates get, you know, because they've crossed certain lines they shouldn't cross. And in fact, the kind of premise of this film is that Will Turner and Elizabeth Swann's son, Henry Turner, is trying to break the curse that keeps his mother and his father separate from each other. His father's stuck with the Flying Dutchman and can't be with his mom, and he wants to break the curse. So that's part of this story that's there. And you get like, you know, voodoo priestesses and witches and all sorts of different things all in there. Now, this is where maybe it kind of can get interesting. As a Christian viewer, you might notice this kind of peculiar thing that happens. There is a young lady character in this film, and she is accused of being a witch, but she insists that she is not a witch, that she's a scientist. But in the 1700s, of course, there aren't really women scientists. So if you're a woman who's a scientist, then you must be a witch. This is the kind of way of thinking. And her name is Corina Smith. And she kind of goes through this movie trying to convince people over and over again that she's not a witch, that she's really a scientist. And there's this one point in the movie where the young man character, Henry Turner, says to the other pirates to get them on board with what she does, because she's an astronomer and they're trying to find the Trident of Poseidon. This is the MacGuffin for it that's going to break all the curses. He says to the other pirates, he says, "You don't have to understand her, just believe her." But now what he's talking about isn't anything supernatural. What he's talking about is the science part, the astronomy part. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to understand it, rather. You just have to believe her. So I think that's like, as a Christian viewer, I was like, huh, that's kind of interesting to have tossed in there about science, not about a religious topic or anything supernatural, but about science, it gets said.
There's also there, you say, a theme of fathers and their children in this latest one. How would you describe it?
Yeah, this kind of shows up all over the place. And one of the things that you get is, actually, you get a cameo in it. What's his name? Paul McCartney from The Beatles shows up just in a very quick cameo. And he's the father of, or he's some relative of Jack Sparrow's. He's in there as well. But really the bigger theme is, like I was talking about, there's Will Turner and his son, Henry. But then, and this is where a spoiler comes out. So if you want to avoid spoilers, if you haven't seen this yet for some reason, just you'll have to turn away now. But Captain Barbossa has a daughter, and the daughter turns out to be this Corina Smith. And so then there's this relationship between this father and daughter, and it kind of comes out nearer the end. And again, with all of these kind of like funny devices and curses and magical things and whatever all going through it, there is this compass, and the compass points to your heart's desire, the treasure that you want. This is something that Jack Sparrow has, but it ends up in the possession of Barbossa. And he holds it, and it points to the girl. and it becomes apparent to him that this is actually his daughter. And there's a moment where he is able to rescue his daughter. But in order to do that, he has to sacrifice himself. And right before he does it, she asks him, "Who am I to you?" And he says, "My treasure." And then he sacrifices himself. And when he does that, there's this shot where he has that Christ pose with his arms out and his kind of feet are closer together and he's falling backwards. And his shirt is open, and on his chest you see this gold cross on a necklace. And it's very clearly a Christian cross just as he does that. So that is a really strong kind of fathers in the when they realize that they really who they are father to, and rising to the occasion and rising to the responsibilities of fatherhood and wanting to protect their daughter. So this is all part of it, right? So that was a very satisfying moment of the movie. And then, of course, Will and Turner and Elizabeth Swann's son setting right what had gone wrong and breaking the curse and getting his parents back together again is also a part of it, too. So you get that in there, too.
Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. We're reviewing some movies here on this Thursday afternoon, June the 29th. When we come back, two more. We'll do The Mummy, which is a Tom Cruise movie, if I'm not mistaken, Transformers 5. Pastor Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, and he's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. And today's movie reviews are brought to you in part by the Lutheran Witness magazine. The Lutheran Witness interprets the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. Check it out at cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness and take advantage of a special offer of 6 digital or print issues for only $6.99. cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Religious liberty. Christians engaging the media. The For You of Christianity. Christian marriage. The sexual revolution. The Benedict option. These are some of the topics for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $120. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
The Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education invites you to attend our Reformation Summer Conference, July 11 through 13, 2017, in Cheyenne, Wyoming, focused on truth and education. Speakers include the Reverend Rolf Preuss, Dr. Angus Manouge, and Dr. Thomas Korchak. Enjoy this year's unique banquet experience at a Wyoming bison ranch. Visit ccle.org for more speakers and information. That's ccle.org.
Welcome to a new world of gods and monsters.
I saw her. She is real.
Please meet Princess Amunet. She will claim what she has been denied.
That is the trailer of the latest Mummy movie, this one starring Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise will he'll take films that are going to be big blockbusters, and I think he's counting on this one being just that. Of course, wasn't it just like 2 weeks ago that there was another Mummy movie that came out? And this, at least the trailer, looks an awful lot like the one that seemed to be recently released. We're going to be reviewing that movie along with Transformers 5, The Last Night. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest on this Thursday, June the 29th. So, Ted, I don't know, what was it? It couldn't have been even 3 years ago that there was a Mummy movie that looks, at least some of the effects, it looked an awful lot like this one.
Well, The Mummy is something that belongs to the franchise, like The Mummy franchise belongs to Universal Pictures. So as a franchise, they kind of keep churning these out. And there's kind of like different iterations of this. So back like in the kind of golden monster age, like when you got like Dracula and Frankenstein and the werewolf and all of these, there's a Mummy movie back then with Boris Karloff as the mummy. But then eventually you end up with like Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein and the mummies in there and like different kinds of things like that. There may even have been an Abbott and Costello meet the Mummy movie. There's a bunch of this kind of stuff out there, and it's kind of goofy. And then they had kind of this series that was pretty fun, actually, at least at the beginning, with Brendan Fraser, and it was The Mummy again. And this is kind of more of that. Now, Marvel has its cinematic universe. DC is working on their cinematic universe. And now Universal Pictures wants to get into that. And they're hoping that this is the vehicle to get that going so that they could have a cinematic universe with these different monsters like Dracula and Frankenstein and this movie here, The Mummy, as well. So, yes, Tom Cruise is right in the midst of all of this. And the voice that you heard over that, that's Russell Crowe. And Russell Crowe plays Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So you kind of have this mashup thing going on, and you can see how they want to put together this cinematic universe.
Okay, so this is about franchise building, at least from your perspective, whereas we have the Marvel Universe, we have all those other ones, where they can just kind of move characters around like chess pieces and release a movie literally every year and kind of keep the momentum, the blockbuster momentum, going on the franchise. That's what they're trying to do here, except with the undead instead of superheroes or demigods.
Yeah, I mean, you'll get probably the creature from the Black Lagoon thrown in there too, right? Because that's part of that same cadre of, Rogue's Gallery of strange characters. I think maybe, I don't know if you saw this movie a while ago, there was a graphic novel that was turned into a movie called The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I was just thinking about it.
Yeah, this is kind of in the same vein as that. And I think it suffers, I'm going to go out not too far on a limb, but I'm going to say that it suffers from some of the same things that that movie suffered from. High concept, could be fun. From interesting source material, turns out not to be so good. And with The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the problem was is they it included Sean Connery. And Sean Connery really threw his weight around and thought it should be a Sean Connery movie. So then it kind of compromised the source material and kind of took on this different shape of things and didn't deliver on what was hoped for. And here, this is like a Tom Cruise movie that happens to have mummies in it. So if you like Tom Cruise, then you're set. But if you don't, then you're going to have maybe a hard time. And like we were talking, there's so many of these mummy movies. Why go see a mummy movie? Well, it's Tom Cruise and there's some action, so maybe it'd be okay. So then people end up wandering into this movie. I, for my part, don't see a lot of Tom Cruise movies anymore. I just can't do it. But for whatever reason, I ended up going to see this one. So here's The Mummy.
You say, like one of the movies that we reviewed a few minutes ago, King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, there is the inclusion of blood sacrifice.
Yeah, so the idea with this is that the mummy in question is, you know, for the modern era, the switcheroo, it's a woman. And she's the daughter of a pharaoh, and she's all set up to be the next pharaoh. She's going to be like, you know, a Queen Cleopatra kind of character, right? And she's the apple of her dad's eye, but then her dad has a baby boy. And that baby boy is going to be the pharaoh and not her. So she wants to be pharaoh. So she, in the end, kills her father and her mother and the, and it might be a mother, like a stepmother, and the baby boy, they all have to die. And she kind of goes through this process, and she's going to, and the last kind of bit of it is she also has to sacrifice somebody else in kind of a ritualistic kind of sex magic thing. And that would solidify all of it and make her into this, you know, have all this, you know, power and both natural and supernatural. So that's part of the story too. So then the kind of way that it gets into the modern world is they find this, the Egyptians kind of stop her from completing her ritual, but then she gets unleashed on the modern world and she starts to try to like gather up her power and find this reincarnation of the man she was trying to sacrifice in her ritual, who happens to be Tom Cruise. And then he must die in order for her to have all of her power, etc. So that's part of the movie itself.
There's obviously the theme of kind of the walking dead or the living dead. Is there anything that points toward the resurrection, which is, of course, an entirely different thing?
Yeah, and you know, the term resurrection gets used quite a bit in this, and there is this kind of sense that resurrection is, like, it's the term resurrection is used, and you see people being resurrected in various states of dishevelment throughout the movie. But yeah, the Christian understanding of what's been promised in Scripture about resurrection is completely different. So on the last day, everyone gets resurrected from the dead together in the final resurrection on the last day. We're all resurrected from the dead. It's not going to be like The Walking Dead. These aren't zombies, you know, but this movie is very much zombies. So it's like a kind of like just trending towards horror film zombies. And less, you know, kind of bumbling mummy kind of thing. So I think that this is a really kind of an important thing for the Christian, because as you're watching it, you need to think about what you actually believe about resurrection and contrast it with what you're seeing on the screen. Like, do that if you happen to watch this movie. And one of the spots where you can do this, some of the ones that get resurrected from the dead are the Knights Templar, a bunch of Knights Templar. But you got to remember, the Knights Templar, for whatever their deal was in the past, they were baptized Christians. So it's weird to see baptized Christians being resurrected from the dead and used by a villain to exact selfish and evil goals on the world. So you see here, like, where it's very much the opposite of what any Christian would believe about A, you know, the Christian life, and B, the promise of the resurrection.
When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about one more film with Pastor Ted Giese. Well, this one is not supernatural as much as it is a super technological. Transformers 5, The Last Night. Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
It has been said, through the ages, without sacrifice, there can be no victory. Two species at war. One flesh. One metal. Optimus Prime has left us.
We're floating in space.
100 billion trillion planets in the cosmos.
Everyone you know.
You want to know, don't you?
Someday.
Why they keep coming here.
There's a trailer for Transformers 5, The Last Night. This one, well, I remember Transformers when they were just kids' toys. My youngest brother, and this would have been back in the early 80s, had all kinds of Transformers that he played with, and never would have thought they would be making movies, especially of this kind, apocalyptic, end-of-the-world, humanity-at-war movies from these little trucks that turned into robots, but they have, and they made five of them. The fifth one we're going to review here with Pastor Ted Giese. Ted, this is a sequel, and the story's come a long way from a cars that turn into robots, hasn't it?
It has, and for the record, this is a horrible, horrible movie. It's horrible, horrible, horrible movie. The first one was kind of entertaining, and then I got a little suckered in when Transformers Age of Extinction came out because Mark Wahlberg was in it. And I went and saw it, and I enjoyed Mark Wahlberg in the movie and his story, and I thought that was great. So I saw that he was going to be in this one, so I thought, well, okay, I'll go see this one. And everything that was gained, and the whole franchise was kind of running out of gas, let's say. It was running on empty, and it was like careening off the side of a cliff. And whatever was gained by including Mark Wahlberg into the story and his storyline was all lost in this. This is a colossal mess. It's very dour. And of course, you know, like, it's very serious. So you know that it's very serious because you have Anthony Hopkins telling you how very serious it all is.
Okay, so is this a finale movie? Is this the last one and intended to be the last one?
Please. Let's hope. There was some internet reviewer who had a three-word review. Make it stop. This is the thing. So this is Michael Bay. It's a lot of explosions, and it's a very barely coherent storyline that is like equal parts crass and loud and garish, and you know, just not, and also simultaneously dour and over self-important, and I'm done. Let's never review another one of these again.
Okay, we won't make you do that. And mercifully, we only have about 2 minutes left. So I'm not going to ask you for a redeeming element in this film, but simply an element that you might find at least a small springboard for discussion. You talk about there is a theme of fatherhood here in this movie, if people bother to go see it. With about 2 minutes, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so if you really want to see that fatherhood theme in a good way, go back and watch Transformers Age of Extinction. In this one, the same character played by Mark Wahlberg, Cade Yeager, he's in it again, and this time his daughter, who was in the previous movie, isn't in this movie. She's off at college or something. And they have included instead this youngish girl, Isabella, into the movie, and played by Isabella Moner. And the trailers often, there's another trailer for it that really kind of sells it on this idea that there's going to be this young woman and she's going to be a big character and she's going to, you know, really maybe convince young women to come and watch a Transformers movie. But it doesn't really pay off on that. And she's kind of the substitute daughter in the situation. So he kind of takes her under his wing. So there's a bit of a fatherhood storyline there. But really, if what you want to see, if you want to see that vocation of father and a strong relationship between a father and daughter, go back, watch Transformers Age of Extinction, and just, you know, skip this one.
Any pastoral concerns about a minute here, Ted?
Yeah, there's a lot of peculiar things in it. And like I said, there's a couple strange things. One thing is that this Cade Yeager and this girl, Isabel, he uses a lot of kind of transgressive language with her. So he calls her dude and bro and stuff when she's clearly not a boy. So it's kind of weird. I don't know. That's kind of like pandering to modern kind of ideas when it comes to language, perhaps. So that's a little odd. Another thing, too, is that Anthony Hopkins has this butler robot character. And this is just really irritating on a certain level, is they got the guy who played Carson in Downton Abbey to voice this butler for this English lord. But he's like equal parts like C-3PO, but like Charles Manson or something. He's like this psychotic weirdo of a character. So I can't imagine a kid liking that. So I think that it's if you're going to see it as a family, there's some kind of just things that are not palatable in the movie. So pastoral concerns is that this is just a gigantic mess and it's not a fun one. I think that it's, you know, kind of rough.
Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Next time, we'll have Pastor Ted Giese review the movie Spider-Man Homecoming, and you can find a link to his reviews at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to be responding to Roman Catholic proof texts. The big subject tomorrow is purgatory. Is it anywhere or allegedly anywhere in Scripture? Pastor Stephen Parks will be our guest, and we'll talk about Martin Luther's post-meal Thanksgiving prayer in our series on Martin Luther's prayers with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Daily worship, historical hymnody, and catechesis interwoven with direct instruction in phonics, traditional math, literature, grammar, history, Latin, and strings. It's part of our daily life at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're located 1 mile off Interstate 55. For more information, visit school.stpaulhamel.org. We would love to share our joy in learning with your child. school.stpaulhamel.org.